か愛。
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Good afternoon. 26 minutes left to the hour of 5. As always, it's Home Run, your drive time show, keeping company wherever you tuned in from, local, regional, international, or whether you're at home, at work, on your way home, on your way to work, on your way to wherever. No judging, just you know, appreciating that you have made time to tune in. Just wherever it is you are headed, if it's not work, if you're on a heist for money, or on a heist for for love, whatever. Yeah. Don't get yourself into trouble because we want you to keep listening. And today's discussion, or more like today's topic here on Home Run, is going to be based on the Natural Resources Standing Committee report. When you hear the word report, then you know that it's a low-key mix-up of serious conversation and humor coming up. Although some of these jokes, literally when it comes to most of these reports, the jokes are writing themselves. Now, this is this is going to take us back to 2021, and we are going to focus more on Omaheke, going to focus more on Omaheke, it's just Omaheke, commas, and, it's just Omaheke and commas, no Hangwena Day, it's just Omaheke.
Is this the level of enthusiasm we are starting today's show with?
It's a report, dude.
No.
What?
It's even more, what you call it? It's more golden. No, I don't know how many levels of gold you get, ne.
I know there's the carat, where they measure the carat system situation of gold and diamonds.
But look, to me, ne, you get that ugly gold, and then you get that like spotless, clean, shiny gold. Now this report.
Yeah.
Helmut, for the better part of 6 years since 2020,
yeah,
I've never really understood what was
the hurdle.
Not just the hurdle. Actually, the hurdle. Because I didn't hear about the hurdle in the 4 years that I've actually been trying to observe. Now, I'm a little bit of an odd journalist in some cases.
Yeah.
I observe a thing. Because in the training we got at NAST, one of the lecturers said, go and observe. Just observe and then write what you've observed. Because that's most the basis for journalism, is to report what you saw.
Yeah.
Report what you experienced. Report what was happening between parties. Who said what and who did what where.
Yeah.
When, how, why, and what was the what. Man.
You know, the moment I came across that NGO story, I twisted my ankle getting here.
Which NGO story? Which NGO story?
On how, you know, some people were just sitting there. This is how I'm picturing. This is more like an intro into the report.
Yeah.
This is how I'm picturing this whole thing taking place. Okay. Let's just go to the, let's start with the intro. And then we get into the report. Then I can come in with my NGO example. Because my NGO example is based on how genius those farmers were.
Exactly. Now that. Okay. You handle it. I'll shut up for like 10 minutes.
Yeah. That's the spice.
Yeah.
Now, last year, the Parliamentary Standing Committee on Natural Resources compiled a very wonderful report that's going to be the main source of our reference on today's Home Run. And this report was based on a consultative meeting that they had with Rosatom. And they had this discussion with with Rosatom's arm that's based and registered in Namibia. Now, Rosatom is a Russian nuclear energy giant. Now, they are involved in a lot of things nuclear, but they also have a mining division that basically takes you to the mining part of of nuclear energy, which is uranium. Now, What dominated the agenda in this discussion was the comprehensive discussion on their Headspring investment. Headspring investment is a uranium exploration activity. Headspring investments uranium exploration activities in Leonardsville, and the mining techniques being used and that mining techniques that's just generating a lot of tit for tat here. Is the in situ discussion, and I think we had a whole discussion on that. I think last year or the year before last. Now, the aim was to this, according to the report, the aim was to assess the scale of investment, progress in exploration, and potential socio-economic benefits, and while also fostering collaboration and mineral beneficiation and nuclear technology in line with NDP-6. So again, according to the report, the International Atomic Energy Agency is on our side when it comes to exploration, when it comes to the use of uranium. Because from what is contained in the report, the IAEA is basically going that, you have it, you better use it, or someone else is going to have to either discover theirs and use it, or they are going to come and buy yours, and then they will use it. So, the green light when it comes to the use of uranium is there. We have that locally and internationally. At least locally, for a lot of people, except an NGO or two. But we're going to get to that in a few.
are they really an NGO? Because here's the thing, Hamoud. No, because really, the discussions I've heard specifically is that people know who the faces behind this organization is, which is more like a community organization.
Which was started conveniently just around the right, the same time that
the exploration moved from the commercial farms to the communal farming areas.
And so hang on a second. So the problem here is when the exploration moved from the commercial to the communal, so did the benefit.
Of course. It's one of the reasons it points it out there. It's literally there.
Okay.
I'll hold my silence.
Guys, it's that exciting. Now, to just, lay this foundation now that we have, what the standing committee was looking at here. Now, a brief description of the exploration on and how everything basically started from the commercial part and its transition to the communal part. On a mark, set, ready, go.
Who, me or you, Hamoud?
Oh, okay, I can go.
Yeah, because you were still busy with the intro, Moss.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, this discussion... Intro. Now the purpose for the visit. I don't have time for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
now here's the thing. Now here's what's taking place here.
Mm.
Hang on a second. I'm looking for NGO. It's a very big letter, as you can see.
Guys, because the whole reason is now, while we're obviously looking for the three letters of NGO.
Yeah.
The important...
I found it, yeah.
Okay.
Now, here's what's taking place here. This exploration is obviously concerns uranium. And it's taking place mostly in the Omaheke region. It's mostly in the Omaheke region, according to the report, with small portions falling under Hardap and the Comas region. And around 39 commercial farms. Now that's a lot of commercial farms. No wonder these guys managed to form an NGO. Moving on.
just go on, Hamoud. I'll get to the juicy part.
A few drilling activities were almost started. Let me start from the commercial, and then because the part I almost started from is the one that spills over into the communal part. Now, Headspring Investment, which is the Namibian registered arm of Rosatom, Headspring Investment has been exploring for uranium in 8 exclusive prospecting licenses, and they have a bunch of numbers basically listing the license, predominantly in the Omaheke region, with small portions falling under Hardap, Comas, Commerce Region, Hardap and Commerce Region, respectively. And now I'm on page Roman numeral 3. And then it goes on to say that most of the exploration uranium core drilling took place in the vicinity of Leonardsville on 39 commercial farms. A few drilling activities were almost, that's where the juice comes in now, were almost started on the communal area.
Yeah.
And in the time the company's drilling permits were revoked late in 2021, this was as a result of complaints by an NGO created exactly at the same time and prepared to be owned, and reported to be owned by the very same farmers who benefited from the company's previous, exploration before the plans to transition from the commercial farm exploration to the communal, part of the land exploration.
Now that.
So listen, hang on a second. If you are not benefiting, screw everyone else.
Yep.
I mean, you benefited. Why can't you just let the guys in the communal area to also benefit?
Now, Helmut, this is why I can now, after 2 years, say the sentence that I've been hearing literally from the stakeholders, people involved with this exploration activity in Omaheke, who have come, who have also literally highlighted the same concern that the organization, this NGO, is only chaired, run, commissioned, administered,
registered
by the commercial farmers in Omaheke region. They do not represent the communal farmers, meaning the underprivileged Namibians who live in the Omaheke region, because they don't represent them. Because clearly, at the heart of everything, because I've been to many of these Headspring events that they try to invite the media to try and sort of like, also say their side, because the same NGO runs to another radio station. I won't mention names. But they run to this other radio station.
So we have a competition?
Not really. Because it's an Afrikaans radio station in Windhoek. So they run to this other radio station. The chairperson of this NGO, they run to this other radio station, because this is what happens every time. And then the guys from... I've been invited... at that stage, Justicia was still with us.
Yeah.
I've been at two events where Justicia and I were, where the executives of the organization, Headspring, says that the reason why they have these sort of like... It's like a quick fire media engagement that we get invited to every time.
Mm-hmm.
Nah? And it has happened 3 times or 4 times in the past 2 years, past three years. Let me be accurate. Past 3 years, nothing has happened so far for this year.
Mm-hmm.
But every time when that quick fire media engagement takes place, here in Windhoek, nah, the executives of Headspring says they are doing this in order, technically, it's a public relations game that they are drawn into.
Yeah.
But they do this media engagement sort of to just basically for them to say their side of things, because the chairperson of that NGO runs to the same radio station. Obviously, it would be brass cup situations, you know. Helmut, I know you, so give me there a quick interview on developments happening. And the situation just stays at this particular stalemate, because obviously it takes place in the realm of public opinion. Mm-hmm. And now, the public, one side of the Namibian public is drawn one side to one radio station. And us who deal in the English realm of communication, we are now obviously informing the English side, the English speaking population of the country. So I really could not understand, Helmut.
Why?
What is this NGO busy with? If they are trying to sort of like stick to a discussion of saying what's the thing's name? Of trying to educate the public, but they're literally trying to derail any investment opportunity. Now the report I am literally mimicking a part of the report in the recommendations and in the conclusion part that says the same sentence that I'm saying. It's because this is what the oversight committee members also saw in terms of their observation. They cited their dear listeners, but for me, I just could not get a clear picture. So
I throw you back, Helmut. Remember the sustainable farming I went to in 2024? The farm here just outside of Windhoek, Krumhoek. Remember that?
Is the one about, is it
organic farming? Yeah, organic farming. Yeah. Do you remember when I went on that excursion specifically there too, on a very super cold Wednesday morning? Mm-hmm. And we had to go and look at, you know, this farmer's cattle, and he was now giving his presentation there in the wind. There on, in Afrikaans, we say then the flakters of Komas region, you know. And right while we were waiting there, there were four ladies there. All four of them were from Ministry of Water, Agriculture and Land Reform at that stage. It wasn't the merger that took place yet. Mm-hmm. And so one of the other media colleagues that was with me on this excursion, I won't mention her name because she just might send me an invoice, because I know she listens to us. She asked the question sort of like there, because the previous day there was an engagement once again about the same NGO making another assertion, another accusation in one of the print mediums in the country, mm-hmm. Meaning the print media, highlighting that the company is sort of like skirting rules or skirt. They were literally making an accusation in this article that the Head Springs company is skirting rules and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And please, guys, I'm not defending the company, nor am I speaking on behalf of them. We're speaking based upon the evidence of the report.
Yeah.
This is the reason why I'm holding this up. I held the observation that I've had for the past 3 years. I've held it in because anything I could say was not being backed up. It was purely hearsay, and it would purely be in just a one-sided discussion, even though I've written two articles, you know, based upon what in situ recovery looks like, or in situ mining looks like, or in situ leaching mining looks like. But I kept it on the technology and primarily the discourse that was taking place at the time. So I had to also give that little bit of a disclaimer.
Yeah.
So during our lunch break, because we were told to make our own food, so we were given all the ingredients to, you know, make a poiki dasha, but to make a poiki there quickly. And then the one lady that is part of the organizing team for this organic farming excursion responds by saying, hey, but I'm also in that organization. The organization's name is the Stumpreet Aquifer, SAUMA, Stumpreet Aquifer Uranium Mining something. It's there in the report. Mm-hmm. SAUMA is the organization's name. And I stood there and we stood there looking and we're like, oh, you are part of this discussion. And she's a commercial farmer. The lady, one of the chief organizer of this organic farming engagement. And she says, yes, we are part of the organization. And then the ministry officials and the SAUMA lady say, no exploration, no mining close to agricultural activities. And I asked them, what are you talking about? We've got five uranium mines mm-hmm. at the coast. We've got gold mines and other mines here in Ochotonjupa region between the farms. What makes Omaheke so special? No one comes up with a discussion. What was one of the best answers I ever got? Mm-hmm. Someone told me at the start of this year, yeah, it's because of the underground water, the aquifer. I was like, based on what are you saying it's because of the underground water? There's underground water all across Namibia.
Yeah, we have a lot of that.
And even though I've asked the question at the recent update, back in last month, so the Ministry of Environment had to give an update in terms of at what status was the IAEA visit, the technical visit that took place last month.
Yeah.
At what stage was that visit specifically with regards to giving sort of like a technical report on their assessment? Now, here's the worst part, Helmut. Here is literally the worst part. Back in 2024, the colleague that we had here, Justicia at the time, she attended the Marintal engagement regarding the stakeholders. Now, you could view that engagement literally as a standoff. Now, it was organized by Ministry of Agriculture.
Like a PR standoff?
Yes. Yes, let's call it a PR standoff. It was literally a PR standoff because when I asked Justicia when she came back from Marintal, because we also streamed it on our social media. I remember that day.
Yeah.
And I asked Justicia, what was the atmosphere like while you were there? And it was still what was the Hartab governor's name? Salmon April. Salmon April was still the Hartab governor, not the new guy, Rian McNab. So Salmon April was sort of like the MC,
But it was the two governors, April and Nganate, were both present at the same event. So at the event, you had Ministry of Agriculture, you had representatives of Ministry of Environment, and I love the conclusion and recommendation that the Oversight Committee gives in this report. They're literally telling a superior ministry, Environment, to stop sitting on their hands on this discussion and literally get up and intervene.
Yeah.
Based upon the discussion. Because here's the thing, Amut. Ministry of Environment. Ministry of Environment is literally absent in most of the discussions because under the former Minister Schledwein, the Ministry of Agriculture purposefully intervened in this discussion. It's here in black and white.
Yeah.
Now, back then, even in the legal presentation that the lawyer of Headspring gave back in 2024. Mm-hmm. I couldn't justify, because you have to look for an action, Helmut. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to look for
cause and effect.
Yeah, you have to look for the person that slapped the other person, or the person that jumped over the fence to trespass in someone else's private property in order for the whole narrative to begin from. Now, I did not know where the narrative began from, in all honesty, because I'm hearing from the executives, but I don't have access to the farmers. But when you speak to the governor tells you, but our region is so poor. Our region only has one economic activity. Our region is underdeveloped. This particular investment opportunity is the opportunity to literally uplift so many people across the region. And it can literally lead to mass development for Leonardville versus just trying to concentrate things in Gobabis. Because Omaheke is one of those regions, Helmut, that literally just have one urban settlement to carry all services for the region. Not just Kavango West. I didn't want to bring in Anakleta's region. But yeah, not just Kavango West. It's not just Kunene that suffers from this particular underdevelopedness, or this particular strain on, development planning, or whatever thing you wish to call it, because in many cases you can literally see there's not much traction happening for regions like Kunene and Kavango West. Mm-hmm. But Omaheke is exactly such a region. Omaheke sits literally very close in proximity to Comas. Omaheke is literally supposed to benefit from Comas' proximity, like Erongo benefits from the particular connectivity to Comas through Ochodonjuba. But if you go and ask now what's happening in Okahania, you can see that it sort of like skips Okahania in a way. But yeah, they built a nice extra new mall there, rediverted traffic away from Okahania. Now you must take an extra detour to go into Okahania. Whereas back in the day, before this new highway expansion or rediversion, if whatever you want to call it, the planning was that you have to go into Okahania.
Yeah.
Okahania benefited from Windhoek or any particular national traffic flowing through Okahania. Now, it still flows through Okahania. Let me not lie. It still flows through Okahania, but sort of like it's a Western bypass. It's a Western bypass. But if you go look at Okahania right now, not Okahania, Gobabis, you drive through Gobabis to get to the border post, right?
Yeah.
That's the last time I remember. You drive through Gobabis to get to the border post. Now, Hamut, why must Gobabis just be a channeling town? Why must it be another Okahania? And I'm asking this from a development angle.
Yeah.
And we have the answers in this report.
The good thing about the report itself is that it's looking at they really did cast their observation net far and wide, because they were not just looking at the tit for tat going on with regards to the Rosatom Namibian arm with this NGO. Mm. They went to look beyond that, like, the status of the exploration.
Yeah.
How far are the exploration, and what are the values that associated in terms of economic, and the socio-economic development that it's going to bring if everything is allowed to basically move forward.
Yeah.
But one thing that I find very interesting is that The report take, for example, on page, you know, Roman numeral 4, that's the second 1, 2, 3, the fourth paragraph reads as follows. The exploration started in 2011 with desktop studies and drilling commenced in 2012. Despite that, in 2013, operations were suspended due to the moratorium on uranium exploration, recommencing with activities again 2018 and 2019 when the moratorium was lifted, which is understandable. Mm. So I'm looking at this and what I'm getting from it is that the activities of Rosatom with regards to the uranium exploration in the region, mm. Mahaki region started, can be traced back to 2018.
Mm.
But all the dangers associated with this exploration and the ipso facto mining were only pointed out in 2021.
When
we all have that one thing only we do, that unique thing that makes you real, just like Vintuk beer.
For some, it's that secret handshake thing that makes you feel like family. For others, it's that brave hold my beer thing when the moment calls for courage. For friends, it's that fun podcast and cooler box thing where the best memories are made.
And for Vintuk beer, it's that barley hops and water thing. Let's raise a Vintuk beer for that real thing only you do. 100% real beer for real people. Not for sale to persons under 18. Drink responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
mm.
and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipura nenge lo wapubwa eva tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe fa omarudi tayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamoili nawa ninge fata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile ko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
mm.
and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye.
Welcome back from that extended break. It's 3 minutes into the hour of 5. You are still listening to Home Run with Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM. And we are still on the Natural Resources Standing Committee report that's coming out of the Omaheke region, specifically Leonardville with Rosatom's uranium exploration in the Omaheke region, which started from the look of things in 2011. And whatever, you know, whatever environmental or agricultural errors that were, you know, that were finally observed, and they started sort of like contesting the exploration and the moving forward of the, you know, of these activities by this an NGO that seemingly, interesting enough, was just started in 2021. Mm. That was around the same time that this exploration were moving from the commercial farmland to the communal farmland. And you have to understand, this exploration came from the look of things. Again, according to the report, this exploration came with a lot of money, and to quote the report, in millions.
Yes, and to quote the report, there's potential of billions to be made directly by Namibia. 5 billion through...
Without the value addition. I was like, hey?
Yeah, 18 billion with the value addition. Now, Hamoud, where have you ever heard such specific numbers? Okay, besides Green Hydrogen's guys, who came up with the 400,000 jobs by 2027. We're already in 2026. Well, okay. You know, yeah. So while we obviously, we're focused on this particular talking point specifically of Omeke, of, you know, this particular engagement of the Oversight Committee, is that the Oversight Committee was also informed that, and this is the reason why Hamoud, back a little bit earlier in today's discussion, I said, well, I highlighted a recommendation that the committee gave to Ministry of Environment in this debacle. The committee told Ministry of Environment in its conclusion and its recommendations, get up off your behind. I almost said fat behind. Get up off of your behind and intervene, because it is a superior ministry over Ministry of Agriculture.
Oh.
It is a superior ministry, Hamoud. Why? Because they've got the word environment in their name. Agriculture cannot come and cut environment away, a part of environment away, and say, you may not have oversight into my mandate. But the performance audit that you and I, the report that you and I looked into last year of the Auditor General that literally said, Ministry of Agriculture, the former, before its merger with fisheries, Ministry of Agriculture is detrimental to the SDGs concerning food security and concerning environmental protection.
Mm-hmm.
Now, firstly, that performance report or performance audit report looked at policies, interventions, and actions, not the financing.
Mm-hmm.
But Minister of Agriculture literally went out of its way to intervene in a mining activity. It didn't intervene in any other mining activity, Hamoud.
Okay, now that's the part that sort of like made me ask myself one question. Is it possible the Minister of Agriculture intervened because most of the farms that were being explored up to 2021 were, you know, is it farms?
Yeah, Hamoud. Commercial farms.
So don't these like commercial farms fall under commercial? Don't these like commercial farms fall under? Wouldn't they fall under Minister of Agriculture? Hence the Minister of Agriculture intervention.
But so too would communal farming.
Yeah.
So too would communal farming. So if the exploration activity had already taken place on the commercial farms,
mm-hmm.
and now the company they had now to apply for its drilling licenses mm-hmm. on communal farmland.
Yeah.
Why are you intervening when it has to move from commercial to communal?
Why didn't you intervene when it was
commercial?
Oh, yeah, that's an interesting...
That's the first angle that you've got to look at specifically, which is the particular angle that the Oversight Committee also cites, because they find it...
Why didn't you intervene from 2011?
Yeah. What was the issue? Why were you busy chopping the money in between, and by 2021, now suddenly when things have to move from your land over the fence into
the communal part,
guys, to go and explore there, now it's an issue. Second scenario, which obviously shows you one of the ugly sides of what's happening in Namibia's agricultural scene, Hamoud, between commercial and communal farmers. It's some of the things that you probably would also have seen participating or happening in Namibia's red meat sector,
mm-hmm.
in our meat production sector.
Yeah.
These nuances are the nuances that lead to certain kinds of, You can call it, you can literally call it like commercial divorces or commercial sabotages in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
A second scenario was the Ministry of Agriculture intervenes in such a way the licensing and all licensing and paperwork is up to date with Ministry of Environment, who has to give you the environmental clearance certificate.
Yeah, yeah.
With Ministry of Mines and Energy, who has to give you its related permissions and allowances, which are all paid for. It's only Ministry of Agriculture that suspended the drilling, the borehole licenses, the borehole permits. Now, why would you just suspend borehole permits, Helmut?
That's interesting.
Do you know what they actually do? All these guys were going to do was test the water. They were going to drill something the size of this. Do you see the size of this, of the circle? It was a cylinder. This is the size of the borehole that they were drilling.
Oh, now that's where the reporting guys are saying that this is something that should have been allowed so that it would also be beneficial for the government, because then they would know, like, the take for example, the chemical composition of the water and know if it's safe.
Exactly.
For consumption.
So why was it only allowed to happen on commercial land? And the moment that the activity now had to go and scope out communal land, the permits get withdrawn. Guess who's the minister?
Kalish Ledwijn was the minister at the time.
And Kalish Ledwijn, even a little bit earlier, I think back in last week, because one of the print media wrote about the same report.
Mm-hmm.
He goes and puts on his social media, the Water Management Act, this act that was cited in the report as well,
mm-hmm.
And that the underground water resources should be protected regardless.
Okay, I seem to have more questions than answers here, because one question is you know,
do
one
you
question,
see? Do you know. See? Do you see?
Because like they point out here that this is a uranium exploration, and if things goes well without all the hindrances, it's going to lead to production, and it has a lot of commercial value.
Mm.
Now the question is, we already have a significant amount of uranium mining activities going on in the country. What makes the Maheke different? We have a lot of it going on in Erongo, for example.
Mm. We will have 5 uranium mines, Hamud. Three will be Chinese. One will be Australian. One will be Namibian. We have 5 open pit uranium mines. We will have 5 open pit. Let me say that again.
Mm-hmm.
5 open pit uranium mines. And there is an aquifer in the Erongo region. I even asked the environmental commissioner, you know, there's an aquifer there. Because the people in Swakopmund drink mm-hmm. well water. They drink borehole water.
Okay.
The fresh water supply mm-hmm. into your tap is a borehole. Where does a borehole come from?
Underground.
From underground.
Yeah.
Now, yes, Helmut, which has to tell you how close or how far is that borehole from Swakop for you to get the water from, to get the water in a desert town, a town which sits in the desert?
Yeah.
How far is that borehole? From which water source is that borehole pulling it? And how far are these mining activities? Because when I even raised that to the Head Springs guys, what's the difference between there and then between Erongo and Omaheke? They mm-hmm. said, okay, it's according to them, which the Environmental Commission also rejected in my question when I asked the same question
mm-hmm.
back in last month. In both scenarios, the people said literally, it's because the aquifer that flows into Erongo mm. is apparently too far away from the mining activities. Apparently, Hamut.
So it's.
But how, where
we
is,
are not sure.
But where is Swakop getting its water if it's borehole water? How far is that water source?
No kidding.
Hamut, a borehole is not a joke. A borehole for Windhoek, the Windhoek boreholes mm. in Windhoek during drought. There's one in, two in Kleinekoppe. One on your way as you're going to, Rehoboth. Literally on that four-way where you will find Simabasia, Prosperita, Auersblick, here on your left-hand side, and Grove Mall will be on your, on the second left-hand side, mm-hmm. On that major four-way. There's a borehole there. There's another borehole on the other side of Windhoek Gymnasium, on the other side of Auersplek. I think there's another one here the side of Windhoek as well. This Klein Windhoek Ludwigsdorf area and Avis. There's another borehole here somewhere. Do you see how close those boreholes are to this urban center?
Yeah.
Now, how far, when I visited my brother in Swakop in 2024, how far does that borehole water have to flow or to be pumped to get to Swakop? And the place he lives is literally a walk away from the coastline. So I'm not talking about the places that are close to the desert, the business area, the residential areas of Swakop that are close to the desert, that literally border onto the desert. I'm talking about the place of the part of Swakop that's literally close to the beachfront, close to the seaside, close to the shore. So the question that emanates from there is, how far is that water flowing? Now, if I'm asking that question, and the discussion that we've obviously now seen in terms of here happening in Omaheke is one based upon, yeah, the for a borehole this big, Helmut. This is 3 centimeters that I'm showing you, Helmut.
Yeah.
3 centimeters in diameter. This is the size of the borehole. This is the borehole permits, the drilling permits that were revoked in 2021. This is the size, Helmut. Even in Russia, when in Dalur on the mine, when we were taken on the field trip, we were shown the size of the boreholes.
Mm.
Same size.
Now, one excellent part, one awesome part that the standing committee makes here is, they basically, write like a list of exploration methods that were used.
Yeah.
There were drilling methods, and now that brings up, I think, the main top, bone of contention in this, Omaheke exploration example, and that's the in-situ method.
Mm.
Because I remember, when we were looking at this discussion from the live stream, was that back in 2024? Mm. Yeah. The in-situ method of mining is one that was basically dominated the headlines in this discussion.
Yeah.
Now, what that brings me to is that, take for example the in-situ method of mining. If it was employed on Omaheke region, would that be the first one to be used in mining for uranium?
Yes, Helmut.
So that would be the first time?
Yes, Helmut.
So that explains the argument over the underground water pollution.
Yeah.
So what's the alternative of that would be?
But you know
open
what,
pit.
But you know what the pollution would be? And the pollution is not even the floating uranium in the aquifer.
Because the uranium is already there.
The uranium has been there since time immemorial.
I also laughed at that when the standing committee guy went full evolutionary biology. That no, it's been here for billions.
But really, this
just
is,
like in a Rongo, I was like, oh, okay.
But this is what our listeners also have to broach. I've now been using a new English word. So, dear listeners, here's the funny part. The accusation is the solution that is used to extract the uranium.
In the in-situ method.
Through the in-situ method. But the in-situ method is a closed loop system, meaning you pour solution in one side and it flows through and it gets sucked out on the other end, meaning it's pipes literally that are connected to each other.
Mm-hmm.
They're literally connected to each other. The downside is they're trying to target the uranium. The uranium is already obviously impacting the underground water.
Mm-hmm.
They are worried about a 3 centimeter in diameter pipe that is pumping a solution through, that is busy capturing what it needs to capture.
Yeah.
And then it pumps out on the other side. It pumps out in the corresponding hole. Mm-hmm. And that particular solution specifically is completely extracted. Completely. Every time. It flows in one side and it flows out the other side.
Yeah.
And its aim is to literally pull in the uranium molecules or the uranium bits or the uranium pieces.
The uranium ores.
From they call it the radionuclides, I think. That's the word they use there. But just for our explanation to you guys, it's literally pulling in the small stones of uranium the whole time. Sort of that the small stones are pulled out with the same solution at the corresponding hole, meaning the exit hole from the entry hole that literally has to flow in and pull this, these specific, specific, let's say particles, out from the ground. Now, the United States is using this solution for mining.
Yeah.
Russia is using the solution for mining. Australia, which is also one of the world's biggest uranium miners, is using the solution for this particular mining method for mining so as to avoid environmental degradation.
Because the alternative would be open pit.
Yes.
Oh.
But because there is an aquifer beneath Omaheke, it makes an open pit a little bit tricky. Because otherwise you'll be sitting with an up and up, Helmut.
Yeah, because you just
where you will reach,
and then you run into water levels.
Yeah, and then that water level starts flooding how many levels of the mine? Mm. And then it's another natural disaster. Then it's another human-made disaster because it's a human activity that caused this disaster. Now, just like they also highlighted that Lake Oshikoto was also a human-made disaster. Do you know that?
Wait, I thought it was just a cave with a very, you know, like a thin roof that collapsed over time.
Well, the guys were looking for this cave. Apparently, these two explorers were looking for this cave, and the supposed cave that they were looking for is in Botswana. And then when they
hang on a second, they were looking for a cave that's in Botswana.
Botswana, yeah.
And they were in Namibia.
And they mistook the spot where Lake Oshikoto is.
Uh-huh.
Because that's the cave. They thought that cave was the cave they were looking for.
Yeah.
When they got there, the cave had already fallen. The cave then, I think it fell in when they were there, or it had fallen in when they got there. And that's how Lake Oshikoto was formed. Now, Lake Oshikoto forms part of the same aquifer that connects Lake Guinas or Guinas Lake. And that has the Dragon's Breath, entry. In, I think, close to Tsumep or Ochevar, Tsumep and Grootfontein. It's through a farm. You can access it.
So we're just sitting on a bunch of tunnels.
Technically, yes. So, now, when you look at this particular discussion of man-made activity that causes a natural disaster, you can also go to Turkey for pumping out the sinkholes that are happening in Turkey, in the east of Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
You have to ask the big question here, Hamoud. So far, the activity is in its exploration and testing phase of things.
Mm-hmm.
The method to be used for mining potentially is supposed to be a method that just drills a 3 centimeter in diameter hole.
But
it drills multiples of these holes.
Yeah.
Because they have to do multiple sites. And then they start with the extraction. Because obviously, as if anyone has done marginal utility in economics, it's about you try to maximize the activity in order to maximize output so that you can sell more of the mineral. But the concern is still, Hamoud. Oh, yeah, this is what I forgot to mention. When I was in that legal presentation by the lawyer that represented Headsprings back in 2024, in the legal presentation that they did, the lawyer highlighted that the Water Management Act was an act that was suspended. Now, I know, you with your legal mind,
Helmut,
the word suspended means either there was something faulty with the act that stakeholders did not like about the act, or there was something else regarding the act that just didn't sit right. Now, here was the funny thing. These guys started in 2011.
Yeah.
The Water Management Act was brought in 2012, I think. The act had been dormant, not suspended, sorry, but it had been dormant since then up until 2024. And then in 2024, the Ministry of Agriculture starts doing, you know, presentations and discussions about the Water Management Act. But here's the thing, that's just why I kept referencing, this act states that you have to pay for every permit, you must buy a permit for every borehole that you're going to drill, develop, or that you're going to drill for. This means whether you're a communal farmer or private land commercial farmer, you're going to buy for your permits. Now, why would we sort of like revive a dormant act that we had not been using during even a drought period?
Now, I'm looking at it from a different angle, and it's taking me to the performance report by the Auditor General on the Ministry of Agriculture, because one of the things they pointed out was a lot of public entities are working in isolation.
Exactly.
Yeah, because that's the only way I can understand the Ministry of Environment giving all these permits for the exploration.
Yeah.
And then the Ministry of Agriculture.
And having the Environmental Commissioner in their office, not in Ministry of Agriculture's office. Yeah.
And now, in other words, when it comes to this exploration, from the look of things, the Ministry of Environment is saying, okay, fine, sure, go ahead. And the Minister of Agriculture, now this was back then, the Minister of Agriculture, this with the previous administration, the Minister of Agriculture in the previous administration, there were two ministries. Ministry of Environment that was okay with exploration. They gave them all the necessary paperwork, hence all the permits, and that's a lot of them. So they went on to basically do the exploration. And halfway through, and they're doing this from 2011, and there was a little bit of a pause. I think from 2013 to 2018, they resume again. Fast forward to 2021, when this, interesting enough, the shift from exploration and the benefits that came with exploration from the communal part of, from the commercial part of land to the communal part of land, then interesting developments begin. And you have the Ministry of Agriculture, intervention. That's one. You have which then halts the continuation of those of the explorations.
Yeah.
Then those explorations, it starts with the intervention.
Yeah.
On the exploration, and those interventions are coming about mostly because of because of an NGO that's conveniently founded, founded around the same time that this movement of exploration is taking place from commercial to communal. And then all of a sudden you have a Ministry of Agriculture intervention, you have an NGO popping out that's opposing the exploration, and you have all this all of a sudden we now have a problem. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, I also couldn't get it. I couldn't get it for the 4 years since 2021, when I saw the first public stakeholder engagement in one of the newspapers back in 2021, because it was just as we came out of the COVID, regulations and the lockdowns. And the single most important thing from there was that the first particular public stakeholder engagement, Helmut, literally had a negative flavor to it. I'll say they use the word flavor because I heard specifically, because they had to go from Gobabis to Leonardville, then to what's the town that I once visited? Arenos. It was the town Arenos. So if you're a mining company, just for the listeners to know, mining companies have to engage with the public. They have to hold multiple stakeholder engagements as far as possible, as extensive as possible. And they've got to answer questions and they've got to participate in discussions. And we've seen this even, for example, with the Total Energies Venus presentations and public stakeholder engagements that have taken place in Windhoek and across the country as well. Across the country, I don't understand why, because the regions that will be impacted is literally Karas, Hardap, Kommas, and Irongo. For the love of me, I don't know why Kunene or Chotonchupa, everyone upwards, needs to have public stakeholder engagements about something happening so far south. Because I don't hear anything about, for example, Kalimbeza rice developments, Helmut.
Consultations being held in Kommas.
Being held in Windhoek, being held in Hardap. I don't hear that. I don't hear of a water...
Include everyone, dude.
I don't hear of a water development discussion that's taking place in Zambezi being held in Swakop. I don't hear of those kinds of discussions. So in many cases, I try to wrap my mind around the weird antics in some cases, how the government tries to respond to public discourse and to public stakeholder engagement. And then you ask the most critical question, but the oil is not going to reach some of these regions. Why are you having consultations so far up?
Just include everyone. It's our oil.
Helmut, if we ever build a refinery in there for the oil and gas, where do you think the oil refinery will be built?
No one is putting it in Zambezi, that's for sure.
Exactly.
Because you just give yourself one heck of a logistical nightmare because you'll have to transport it.
Exactly. And which is the closest region, just by geography, to install a refinery?
That would be Erongo.
No.
What?
Helmut, the oil wells that look promising are all across Karas region. They are nowhere close to Erongo.
They're offshore, but if you were to take, for example, face them directly standing from the Namibian shore, you would have to stand in
Luderitz.
In Luderitz.
Yeah. Or in Oranjemund. Or in Rospina. You'll have to position the oil refineries there. Because why? The further the distance, the more price you add onto the thing.
Yeah, because unnecessary transport cost.
Exactly.
So the question of why all these sudden changes that happened like in subsequent order, basically a lot of changes happened with regards to this exploration that happened in 2021.
Mm.
Now, why the formation of the NGO and the Ministry of Agriculture's intervention did not begin when the exploration started back in 2021? It's one of those questions that I think the standing committee here was trying to understand the same question.
Mm.
And why the NGO that was formed by predominantly the same farmers whose explorations basically started on their, on their properties.
Yeah.
They didn't seem to have a problem with it back then. But, fast forward to 2021 or, during this transfer of exploration or movement of exploration from parts of land that was benefiting them to, parts of land that will not benefit them, at least not in a direct way as it was before that movement.
Mm.
Now, if you just look at it, the last sentence, sentence in the last paragraph of page one, and then you just scroll your way to the last sentence in page one. Get the second part later. The Parliamentary Standing Committee on Natural Resources undertook a process to understand why Headspring Investment Rosatom's drilling license was abruptly withdrawn, and 4 years later it was not being reissued, despite the investor investing close to $1 billion in exploration activities. So the committee undertook the following. Then they list a series of activities that they take.
An investor invests $1 billion in exploration.
That's when you are telling them
no.
Yeah.
Are we, Helmut? Is Namibia smoking something?
Arbitration case that ConocoPhillips, the American oil giant, was involved in with Venezuela.
Yeah.
It's in some way similar to this. It has to do with in contract law it's called misrepresentation. It's I acted on information that you gave me, and all of a sudden you are telling me that I'm at fault. So in other words, I'm at fault because you misled me. If you would have told me from day one that this was a mistake, I would not have spent all this money. Now what am I supposed to do?
Mm.
So, you just sit there, and now that's why this raises the question of if this whole, NGO and intervention, if all these things, happened in 2011, this would be understandable. But, from 2011 to 2021, about $1 billion later, that's when you are saying, about that, you really have to stop. What?
But here's the thing. You're a minority stakeholder. That's the thing. The Ministry of Agriculture. And this is the worst part, Helmut. With the NSA's particular, and I know the site mapping exercise they did just before the reports that they brought out about each region and each of the towns in each region, the site mapping was about the business enterprises and the activities and the economic activities in each of those urban settings. They didn't look at the rural areas. Now, Omaheke was one of the regions that had the acute malnutrition that they suffered from 2023, no, from 2022 to 2024. For some reason, in between, we just got a global amount of malnutrition, guys. We don't know if it went up, where it came down. You know, we just know it was this global amount for 3 years. So that's how data, you know, analysis works in Namibia. No, just give a global amount. Don't break it down per year.
Nah.
Don't scare the Namibians. The concern from this was, Helmut, I interviewed Nganate, Pio Nganate, about, you know, what's going for Omaheke. He highlighted his region suffers from poor economic activities because it only has farming to its name. Gobabas cannot attract any investment because Gobabas, obviously, if you ever have seen a Gobabas, Gobabas is Gobabas. Gobabas tries to participate in that transport corridor activity discussion. But here's the thing that Gobabas also doesn't have in its favor, Helmut. If you are transport corridor, people won't sleep over in your town because the car's engines or the car's fuel tanks today can literally drive them all the way from Windhoek all the way to Gaborone. And they will only refill in Kang. I've driven through Botswana. The next refill station won't be in Botswana. I won't be in Gobabas. It'll be across the border in Kang. And Kang is literally 100 kilometers away from the Botswana border. And then from Kang, you'll be able to drive all the way to Gaborone. Now, the big concern would be, why would you stop in Gobabas? Gobabas, yeah, maybe to use the toilet here, stretch your feet there, let the blood circulation flow. But you won't see the region of Omaheke. You won't care about the region of Omaheke because you're driving through the region of Omaheke, through Gobabas. You're being channeled through, and all visitors coming through from South Africa and Botswana are being channeled through Omaheke and Gobabas. So no one cares about Omaheke and Gobabas. But now we have a purpose to care.
Look, whoever wrote this thing.
Huh?
Whoever compiled this,
I think this is someone specific who knew how to write English. I don't want to mention names. There's a suspicion who, one of the parliamentarians. But someone wrote this English because this English is tip top. Ask Helmut. Even the typing is crisp because the other reports that we've done by the same committee. I mean, just getting through the typographical errors, is one thing. Because sometimes the sentence goes one way and then just because of a typo, the sentence flies back in another direction.
Yeah.
But this report is crispy.
Impeccable. Now,
You're going with impeccable?
I know.
Well, it is impeccable technically. Yeah. I mean.
The exploration activities before the halt benefited the commercial farmers. Now, let me just, start that from where I, you know, start that from the last sentence on the last paragraph of page one.
Yeah.
The Parliamentary Standing Committee on the Natural Resources undertook a process to understand why a Headspring investment, that's the Rosatom arm that's registered and basically operating in Namibia. Why Headspring Investment Rosatom's drilling license was abruptly withdrawn, and 4 years later it is not being reissued. That's the question. Now going to page three, and you go to D, and that takes you to sort of like a basically more of a continuation from there, and even though there are a bunch of paragraphs in between. Then it goes on to say that the exploration activities before the halt benefited commercial farmers. Now, we're talking about from 2011. There was a little bit of a pause there, obviously, because of the moratorium. And then it resumes again around somewhere in 2018. Now, the exploration activities before the halt benefited the commercial farmers. And an NGO that supports the closure of the project was founded around the same period the project was stopped. And it's support, supported mostly by the commercial farmers. Like, again, why didn't they form it in 2011? Because...
Wait. Before you get to the end of that sentence, if you look at D, the second sentence that starts with, this NGO continues to get preferential support.
Oh, that's where I was headed.
Oh, my goodness.
Look, this report, guys, please just keep them coming because...
Oh my God! You know, at this time, you know, I'm going back to my Catholic roots. Tomorrow, you'll see me on Sunday in St. Mary's Cathedral, there in the middle of Windhoek. You know, today is the day I'm going back. I'm believing again in humanity.
Hey, we're still on the benefit here.
I'm believing in humanity already.
Look, while you and I are broke, the amount in compensation is in millions to commercial farmers. Now, the NGO continues to, now that's when it comes to that part. Now, the NGO continues to get preferential support from the then leadership of the Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform. That's a politically correct way of saying we just don't want to mention any names.
Now, but we know who it is.
Now,
hint.
Their claim.
wink. Nobody.
Their claims are that the aquifer will be contaminated by both the uranium exploration activities and later the mining. And it must be said that the exploration activities are not... this is the part where that made me go like... this part was written by someone with a good sense of humor.
which it was. This person was honest.
It must be said that the exploration activities are not importing uranium to come and deposit it on the site where it is being found. I was like, seriously? That was uncalled for. But moving on.
Because the uranium is it's already there. It's already there. Now, anyone drilling a borehole in Omaheke, your water is already radioactive because of the uranium below ground level.
So, the uranium is a natural resource which has developed there for billions of years, just like in a Rongo region. So, the radiation or high natural concentration
is already there. Well, on that note, dear listeners, we're quickly taking a short live read, and we come back right after this. Davichi University, for the 2026 January applications that are now extended, for the Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education, for the following programs: the Certificate in Project Management Level 5, the Certificate in Supply Chain Management Level 5, the Diploma in Legal Studies Level 6, the Diploma in Supply Chain Management Level 6, the Diploma in Project Management Level 6, the Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours, the Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours, the Bachelor of Laws Honours, the Bachelor of Supply Chain Management Honours, and the Bachelor of Project Management Honours. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Davichi University, where everyone is an achiever. Man, I like neutrality.
Forget the uranium, forget the radioactive water and all that. The question is, if the concerns are very genuine from the NGO, the Ministry of Agriculture, or to this point, I think at this point it's we may as well just leave the Ministry of Agriculture out of this before the current administration's Ministry of Agriculture thinks we are talking about them. It's not you guys.
It's not you guys.
It's the previous administration.
It's not even the minister between you guys that got, locked up.
You guys are innocent on this one.
Yeah, it's literally 2024's start of 2025. Mm-hmm. Ministry of Agriculture.
Now, why were these concerns not raised in 2011 when this whole thing started?
It's a wonderful question, Amos.
Yeah.
It's a question obviously not answered here.
No wonder the committee basically went like so. Hang, let me get this straight.
You are playing development dilly-dally here.
When you guys were benefiting, it wasn't a problem.
Yeah.
But as soon as the benefits shifted from you to someone else, all of a sudden environmental concern.
When it went from private to public, now you guys are concerned. Here's the thing, Hamud. Just, you remember the part that you read, part D?
Yeah.
In part B, you know, two paragraphs up, where it starts with Headspring Investments, Rosatom's uranium discovery in Leonardville, is estimated, meaning they know the size of the deposit that is there, is estimated to be between 50,000 and 100,000 tons of uranium. Let's just use, because they're using the element.
That would be uranium oxide.
Yeah, they're using the element here. 50,000 to 100,000. Guess what is the value, dear listeners, of this deposit? 18 billion, not Hendrik Witbooi's. 18 billion, what's the guy's name? Andrew Jackson's. US dollars. 18 billion US dollars without any value addition, which could increase that value even further. This means for 15 years, we've been playing literally, Park the Bus football by Jose Mourinho with an investment that could have literally changed the face of Omaheke.
So, in other words, you better start being nice to people from Omaheke. Because the standing committee here seems to be siding with you know with the exploration guys. Like, well, we now the EIA doesn't seem to have a problem with Namibia exploring its uranium advantages and basically taking advantage of it. We don't have a problem with it. And
Grossi even told the people, Hamut, in last year when they flew to Geneva.
Yeah,
Grossi told them. Namibia has to get onto the opportunities of
what the heck are you waiting for?
Do you know what is one of the dumbest questions I've heard in my life? And I'm sorry for mentioning this, but it comes through from another journalist when we went, last month to the environmental commissioner's, this press statement that he had to give there regarding the International Atomic Energy Agency's, technical team visit. Now, just to give you an update, dear listeners, from this report, sites 2025 activities, the discussion of what I'm talking about that happened in last month was that there was a technical team from the International Atomic Energy Agency, which is an energy agency superior to the UNESCO team that was here. The UNESCO team just came and looked at the aquifer and said, well, they will have to go and consult because people were hoping, and this specifically was the Ministry of Agriculture once again, they were hoping. And so the NGO as well, from the analysis, the observations that I made regarding...
That was done by UNESCO.
No, the discourse that from the speeches, Hamud. If you ever have the chance to go look at those speeches, you go see literally that the officials of the Ministry of Agriculture, the UNESCO person, the two governors were trying to stay neutral. They were not trying to take sides. But it was literally the Ministry of Agriculture, because technically it was their activity that they took to Marindal for that engagement, and the UNESCO people. And then this NGO was literally, the three of them were literally against this exploration activity. Mining, it's exploration. Ask your question, Amu. Ask it.
So the three of them being the Ministry of Agriculture, NGO, and who else were
just... And UNESCO.
So they were against the exploration.
Yeah. Now, the UNESCO lady, because remember, the whole discussion that I couldn't understand was that everyone thought the UNESCO team and the UNESCO person that was there, the high-level person that was there, everyone thought that this team would come and sort of like give a final verdict. That's not the UN's role. The UN does not intervene in domestic affairs in a country. They give advice, they give recommendations, and they give technical support. They don't intervene. So it's from the discourse that I observed, Helmut. It looked as if people were hoping that UNESCO's team would come and make a final verdict.
That, you know what, this is it, just pack your bags and leave, you are not going to continue or something.
Verstandje. But after spending $1 billion, would you do the same? Would you pack your bags and just bounce?
Nope.
And by that time, it was year 13, ne? It was 13 years later. of spending $1 billion,
yeah,
of even sending underprivileged Namibians from the communal farming areas of Leonardville to NIMT, sponsoring them with what's the thing's name? With, what's the thing's name, man?
Bursaries.
With bursaries and scholarships. Spending money.
Again.
You are spending hard cash, and people, and for some reason, Namibians think, ah, let's just take people's money, which technically sounds like scamming. Let's just scam someone and run off with their money, and then go and make claims in public and play a public relations game by saying, yeah, don't allow that person to do the activity. Look, it might sound legal. It just doesn't look right. Because in many cases, people are wondering why Namibia is looking the way it looks after 35 years of independence. And literally to come to a scenario where this report reinforces a suspicion I had that these are Namibians playing games with the lives of other Namibians. Namibians undermining the potential, undermining the promise, potential does speak of promise, but literally undermining the future that we could have had for a part of Namibia, and by playing games. Basic games, Helmut. And it's not just basic games, it's ugly games. So you were chopping the money on your side of the fence, and the moment I must now have my time to chop the money on this side of the fence, I'm being told I cannot have the money. But I can give permission to the guy coming here with his technical team to come and drill a 3-centimeter diameter hole in the ground. 3 centimeters. It's not even the lithium mining discussion at Uis, where people literally fell into deep holes. They fell into deep holes. Do you know, Helmut, I heard a very weird statistic that we've got literally like 200 supposedly, and I'm speaking under correction because I just have to remember which discussion it was. Mm-hmm. But we've apparently got 200 unrehabilitated mining sites in Namibia.
Yeah, we have a bunch of those.
No, the number 200.
Yeah.
We have 200 unrehabilitated
again
mining sites.
Ministry of Environment, you really have to pull up your socks on that one.
But we want to complain about a 3-centimeter hole, a 3-centimeter diameter hole.
That could give someone millions of dollars that I was not, that I was getting, but now I can't because it's not my land that's being explored. That's the most selfish thing you can
say. It's selfish! It's childish! Huh? Have you ever seen jealous children? They go and take, if you buy one kid a toy,
yeah,
the other kid comes through, either cries, there's 3 actions that happen. Either cries, you know, because of sadness,
yeah,
or the child literally then approaches the other kid that got the toy, takes the toy from that kid, which is bullying, to go and play with the toy.
Yeah.
Because that child doesn't understand why they didn't get a toy, but the other kid got a toy. And the third scenario is the child gets angry and still does the same thing by confiscating the toy of the other child. That is literally the mentality that we are witnessing in this report. It is childish. It is childish games with people's future. But it has happened so many times, Ahmed. I have heard so many stories about it. Across Namibia. I've heard so many stories. The saddest thing is,
mm-hmm,
the victims in many scenarios. Sometimes they are victims. Sometimes mm-hmm they are people that are negatively impacted. Because in one or two scenarios, either an action happens,
yeah,
that negates the person, the affected party, from being able to seek recourse, you know, or the second scenario is that the action looks harmless. The action is dressed up in a sense of like, it is for the greater good. It has this, what is that word that I loved using it once at a time? It has this altruistic perspective, you know, it is for the greater good. It is to look after the environment. It is to look after the communities here. But then you go talk to the people on the ground. And the people say,
like, what are you talking about?
But we don't have jobs. We don't have jobs. We don't have access to jobs. We don't have access to money. We don't have access to food.
we don't have access to this. We don't have access to services. We don't have access to that. For me to seek medical services, I have to go to Gopabas. Or Leonard Falone has a clinic and the clinic is open, 2 days out of the 7 days in a week. Which is obviously a clear lie that I'm saying because I'm just giving an example.
I was about to say, what the heck?
Just for dramatization, I don't know if there's a clinic on Leonardville. I also don't know if the clinic only stays open 2 days of 7 days. I'm just being dramatic, guys. I'm just being an unpaid actor. That's all.
There better be, there better be a clinic. Again, the question that's going to just, raise a lot of suspicion here is that if the concerns you have are really genuine concern about you caring for the environment and underground aquifer and everything, and you're a farmer, I'd understand, but the question is why did you first have to benefit before raising those concerns?
The saddest thing is also, Helmut, we clearly now have a direction where Namibia is citing that they want to utilize the potential that uranium offers. Because if you look at the five uranium mines in Erongo, they are all just about extraction.
Yeah.
Helmut, I have not heard any of them potentially looking at the further potential benefit. Okay. This mining venture here in Omaheke will obviously seek they're firstly citing that yes, the underground value of the ore, of the uranium ore, is the $18 billion, ne? Mm-hmm. I've also heard from the executives from the few times that I engaged with them that the lifespan of the proposed mining activity would be a quarter century, at least 25 years. To get all that ore out, Helmut, all that ore out. It's not, Russia doesn't want our uranium. That's the worst part, guys.
No, uranium, Russia has its own uranium.
Russia has stockpiles of uranium. Russia is selling uranium. Russia doesn't want our uranium. That's also the first thing you have to understand.
That's one interesting one. Why are they interested in exploring it? Because now that you pointed out, you just reminded me that Russia doesn't need anyone's uranium.
They don't.
No.
They're actually one of the largest.
They have a lot of it.
They produce more than us, them and Canada. They must number one and number two, I think. Us, them, and Canada. But because they've produced so much uranium, that they've got stockpiles of uranium, and that they're selling uranium, they don't need to go and dig someone else's backyard up to extract.
Yeah, the one that they're planning on extracting here, what are they planning on using?
It technically looks like a development project. I'll say it again. This is a development project. So the second scenario specifically is also that you can see that the community engagement, that NGO, doesn't have a plan because they didn't even cite. There's no citation here how the Ministry of Agriculture, for its reasoning, and that NGO has a development plan, an alternative plan for Omaheke. There's nothing cited here. And these people went and met with the Ministry of Agriculture, remember? Mm-hmm. There's nothing cited here. So please help me understand, Helmut, that in the game of investments, if you're going to negate someone else's investment, you must put up an alternative. You cannot just put defense. Yeah, just because you're standing in front of me, I don't feel well. You must motivate why. Because in the broader scheme of things in the world of development, the country wants to know why you look the way you do. Why are you still having malnutrition?
Now,
after chopping someone else's millions.
Part of the very long, really long conclusion provided in this report is...
Are you starting at conclusion or recommendations?
No, recommendations, that's...
Below that.
Yeah, just the, just the first part, not, yeah, just the first part, that's a conclusion is on page 30. You're looking at 13.1. That's a very interesting thing that they're pointing out there with regards to how these explorations could lead to, you know, it's in line with Namibia's, you know, NDP-6 and how the, you know, how it could be good for development, obviously. And, you know, the EIA, the International Atomic Energy Agency seems also to be, you know, in the loop with regards to this exploration.
Yeah.
So the, you know, from the look of things, we have a lot of, you know, like we have approval from the International Nuclear Body. And
Nuclear body that consults the Security Council. Let's also give differentiation.
Yeah.
It is more superior than UNESCO. UNESCO does not have the opportunity to consult with the Security Council. The IAEA does.
Look, as long as it's nuclear, the IAEA carries supremacy.
Exactly.
13.2, man, that part of conclusion by the committee. Bravo. The committee concludes that, oh, now these guys are like, you know what, that's it. We're tired of beating around the bush. The committee concludes that there is a lack of understanding created specifically to sabotage this uranium project. Like, huh?
Straightforward. Shooting from the hip, Nohal. You know, in gaming, in Call of Duty,
where they
say shooting from the hip, you know. Literally,
hip firing.
You don't even need to aim anything.
Yeah, forget ADS.
Just start shooting.
The uranium is already there, as proven. So it is safe to say that the natural high concentration of radionuclides has already taken place for millions of years. Now, this is unavoidable. The current situation as it stands is a clear and present danger because there are no capacities to test for the radionuclides. Now, that testing is what would have been done. It's part of the exploration process. That means it would have been an advantage also.
Mm.
Oh, okay. Now,
but people were chopping monies.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that money was migrating, Baba, and you know, someone
chopped the monies.
People were
having parties and siestas.
Look, this is one of those toxic, intimate relationship type of mentality. The of if I can't have you, no one will type of.
Yay! Yeah, but when do we get to?
If I can't have you, no one will.
Yeah, in that other is words, true. That is
look,
true. That
look,
is true.
The only way you will be here is if I'm benefiting. As soon as the benefit shifts from me to someone's hands,
nobody will get a dime. I'm sorry, guys, for my Trevor Noah references, but yeah, you know. But this is what this report has been doing too. Because I was like going, I knew it. But yeah, how much you were still saying?
The economic advantage is well outlined here, because if you look at the figures, 18 billion in US? 18 billion in US.
And you've already spent 1 billion Namibian dollars in exploration, in compensation packages for the activities that you conduct on people's land.
And no one complained.
Interesting. And the moment that you are going to now for your next cycle of applications of borehole licenses, borehole permits.
And all of a sudden,
now there are handbrakes, roadblocks, T-junctions, cul-de-sacs, and even boom barricades in between. Who puts up a boom barricade on a borehole permit?
Guys, politics is not boring. Just put your hands on these reports and you're going to love it.
You're going to firstly, you'll get emotional. You'll probably go through emotional.
If you are from Mahake, chances are very high you'll punch someone in the face. Which not recommending
it's
that
not
one.
Advisable. Please
it's
don't
not
do
advisable.
That.
Not yeah. Recommending that one.
But it's public. The report is public.
It is public. So now the good thing is, this committee just went there and did what they do best. Analyze the situation on the ground and compile a report. And this report, more often finds themselves in the hands of, the home run duo, and we are not very politically correct.
We are making omelets here, bro. And the omelets include all kinds of eggs. You can add in ostrich, guinea fowl, you name it.
No, we have three, 4 minutes left before we disappear. Do you want to throw in something from the recommendations?
I'll actually do this particular nice scenario. So the IAEA specifically, knows Namibia very well. Why? Because the IAEA, Hamoud, guess what? Has been testing nuclear science for agriculture or nuclear science for food program. Mm-hmm. That the Food and Agriculture Organization, which is a world food program organization of the UN, had been testing here in Namibia. Why? What does this do? They were using nuclear science, meaning radiation, to literally kill pests, to literally kill insects, harmful insects.
Isn't that not going to make them, you know, give them superpowers?
Who? The insects, or the plant?
The insects. Or both. We don't want a hawk running around here's in the thing. Form of a cockroach.
Here's the thing. The benefits, if you've ever read up on that thing, the benefits is it does kill the pests.
I can imagine.
It actually makes the crop a little bit more resilient. It's just a little bit of an expensive exercise because you're using radiation from obviously in the combating of making the plant or the crop more resilient to external threats to the plant.
Mm-hmm. Before you start being worried, oh my God, well, radiation. So is banana, by the way. It's naturally radioactive.
Yes, thank you, Helmut. Thank you for mentioning the banana. So if people go and look on the research bananas that we love eating in Namibia, and it's got nothing to do with the other particular tropes that happen, the negative ones. Bananas have radiation in them, guys.
Yeah.
You've been eating a radiation emitting fruit, which grows naturally with that radiation.
It's just not high enough to give you the cancer that you're worried about.
The worst part is also, Helmut, that if you've ever read up about bananas, bananas is known as probably one of the best superfoods that exists in the human diet.
Alongside, I think it's one of, if not the highest rich, you know, the richest, the highest
in potassium.
In potassium.
Yeah. Now there was a video on YouTube. The downside of that video was that I never saw what this guy was saying, because the guy said every day he eats for breakfast a banana, or he has a banana slushy, or banana, what's that? Banana smoothie.
Banana smoothie, which is
lovely. Bananas and yogurt.
Banana smoothies.
Bananas and yogurt. As long as it has yogurt in it, because yogurt is good for your
gut bacteria.
For your gut bacteria, plus the banana. If you've got both running, ammo, do you know?
Should start adding, you know, yogurt to mine. Surely just throw in, a couple of, tablespoons of peanut butter, and one or two raw eggs. Just blend it all together.
I almost said disgusting, but you know what? You were drinking that. When things come to raw eggs, I'm like, nah, bro.
No, you won't even taste it.
Nah, bro. No. But okay. So, this one guy.
You're not the first one to say that, by the way.
Because it looks like one of those movies I used to watch as a teenager. You know, when those guys that would go gymming, and they throw everything into the blender, which includes two raw eggs, celery, onions, and so that you're wondering, like, how your taste buds going to be this confused with all manner of tastes, that you, flavors that you're throwing into one blender.
Actually, it was first made for me.
What? Oh, someone made it for you.
Someone made it for me. That's when, you know, after tasting it, now it's become an addiction.
Now it's a Helmut thing.
Now it's
the Helmut shake.
Yeah.
So this guy highlighted specifically is that since he eats a banana every morning for breakfast, instead of having a breakfast, whether it be oatmeal or a cereal or anything, that rich in potassium contribution that bananas do literally helped him deal with belly fat. You know, this around the abdominal area?
Yeah.
It literally helped with that. Now, there's no way that the resources that I tried looking up on, that people could say, listen, this is a fact, this is a possibility, mm-hmm. this is that.
Just be one of those content creator thing.
Yeah, those guys that went promoting things after COVID. You know what, look at me, I've got strong muscles from eating a banana every morning. I'm like, brah, in between you were gymming, ne? That's why I don't see the gym sessions.
Throw in you know, some genetic predisposition as an advantage.
Probably that as well. Or that there's just something seriously wrong with American food. And he's just showing the reverse of staying away from the other foods in America than, you know, by having an organic diet.
Yeah, we are 8 minutes into David's time before he murders us. That brings us to the end of Home Run for the day. So until tomorrow, same time, same place. Parliament, Office of the Auditor General.
You guys are stars, guys. You must invite me to a bride.
Except Ombudsman, this whole thing of just writing reports on when someone complain, that you know, you guys should stop that. Just investigate more, so that people can crucify themselves more. We need things to
you
talk
know,
about.
Just go and be active. You know, yeah. just go do something, mm-hmm. Ombudsman. That's the advice we can give you guys because. The oversight just committees are working like overtime.
Yeah, they're working
for some
overtime.
Reason. I mean, they've been releasing a lot of reports, Samuel.
Yeah.
But yeah, on that note, guys, stay tuned for the next program after the break. Obviously, it's once again been a blast bringing you a very, very, very,
very Stingy Men's Association report. Until tomorrow.
Same time, same place. Enjoy the rest of the programming in our company.
Yeah.